What if we woke up one morning and all of the dinosaur bones in the world were gone? How would we understand these iconic animals and their 165 million year history on Earth, who had adapted to all environments from pole to pole? What clues would be left to discern not only their presence, but also to learn about their sex lives, raising of young, social lives, combat, and who at who? What would it take for us to know how fast dinosaurs moved, whether they lived underground, climbed trees, or went for a swim? With a unique detective-like approach, Anthony Martin takes a look at many of these issues and interprets the forensic clues of these long-extinct animals in his new book, Dinosaurs Without Bones, Dinosaur Lives Revealed by Their Trace Fossils. The book is published by Pegasus, and we welcome Anthony Martin to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Joe. It's a pleasure.
It's very nice to have you aboard. What got you thinking in this regard of trace fossils?
Well, trace fossils I started learning about when I was a graduate student in geology, and I was just fascinated with them because here were these vestiges of past lives that tell you whether a trilobite or a worm turned this direction or that more than 400 million years ago. And then when I found out dinosaurs also left trace fossils, that made it even better, knowing that they left tracks, nests, stomach stones called gastroliths, feces, and all of these other traces of their lives, how they behaved, how they interacted with their environments. It just hooked me from then on.
When it comes to this science, this is ichnology, correct?
That's correct.
And what exactly is that, and what do you have to know to do that?
Ooh, great question. I'll answer the first one first, that ichnology comes from the Greek ichnos, and ichnos means trace. Implied with that is there's some behavior behind it. So this is a mark or some sort of clue that an animal leaves behind as a result of its behavior. It had to be alive when it did that. Now, the training that you need, it's really varied. You have to look at modern animals. That's something I do a lot, is I track modern animals and look at the traces of modern animals to use as those images to be able to recognize something in the fossil record. But then you also need training in geology. You need to understand how the geology is going to affect how those traces are preserved as trace fossils. And then you need a little bit of imagination. So you have to be both a scientist and an artist of sorts, being able to combine the imagination with what's there in the rocks in front of you.
And there is certainly the field aspect to this of going out and digging, but there's also a lot that technology has helped in the advance of the science, correct?
Oh, that's for sure. We've been very fortunate, paleontologists, ichnologists, very fortunate in the past 10, 20 years or so with digital visualizations. Now we can do laser scans of a dinosaur track, or we can do aerial photos and have digital mapping. We can do these quantitative analyses that we couldn't do as little as 10, 20 years ago that really give us much more insights into what's there in the trace fossils that can tell us about which dinosaur this was, what it was doing, who was eating who, those sorts of details.
So what ultimately is a trace fossil? I mean, how much of that is obvious and how much of it isn't?
Yeah, sometimes it's really obvious, but there are other times you can be standing in a dinosaur track and not know it. So it really requires looking at a lot of dinosaur trace fossils, developing those search images, and then you have kind of in your head a catalog that you can compare those to. Every now and then I'll see something that's a little bit of a stumper. I don't quite understand what I'm looking at. But I found that if I've gone out in the field enough, and you're right, it does require a lot of field work. If I've gone in the field enough and I've seen enough dinosaur trace fossils, then it makes those obscure ones a little easier to figure out.
And obviously, you have taken ichnology and also paleontology. So there is still, we're talking about dinosaurs without bones, but we still need the bones, right?
Oh, yeah. There's a chapter in there I have called Broken Bones, Tooth Marks, and Marks on Teeth. And I start out the chapter of that by saying, here's where I cheat. And I have to use bones to be able to talk about those trace fossils. The bones sometimes have the preserved traces of, say, impact by another dinosaur. Another dinosaur, say, rammed into that dinosaur, left a broken bone or a scar. Or there could be tooth marks left by another dinosaur. Even chewing. When a dinosaur was chewing plants, for instance, there's microscopic silica that might have been on or in those plants that left these little scratch marks on the teeth. Those are trace fossils, too. So bones, we still need those. And it's also very useful with bones, with dinosaur bones, to especially get feet. I'm very interested in dinosaur feet because those really help me to better identify the tracks and make those matches, kind of in a Cinderella sort of way. Who does this footprint belong to?
You talk about this in the book, and I'm hoping you can address it with us, about the fragility of this, that when we talk about tracks and nests and droppings and other non-bone relics, there is great fragility, as there is with a dinosaur bone, I assume.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. And with tracks especially, if you think about it, a normal track that's made in mud or sand today, if you come back to it, say, 3-4 days later, it might be gone. So there have to be special conditions to preserve those. What's great about dinosaur tracks is oftentimes they're preserved as under tracks, where the dinosaur stepped on a surface, and it compressed the layers that were underneath that surface. Well, the top may get eroded, that original dinosaur track may get eroded, but it still leaves this ghostly imprint of the track below that surface, which does get preserved. In other instances, you could have coprolites that those are fossil feces, that if they're deposited in water and they get buried quickly enough, then that would get preserved too. So you have to have special conditions to preserve a lot of these trace fossils, but when you have 165 million years to play with, it happened quite often.
You make an interesting point in the book that if you look at dinosaurs, that some of these creatures weighed 20 to 40 tons. And if you compare that to, say, an elephant, which weighs around 8 tons, you really have to wonder what kind of trace they leave, because it would have to be quite substantial, especially given any given activity.
Yeah, that's right. So there were several parts of the book where I speculate a little bit about what does a dinosaur trail look like? Because today we have game trails that are made by mammals and some birds that are very easily detectable. You can see them easily from, say, even a satellite photo. Now think about something, like you said, 20 to 40 tons, and they're moving in herds. How that absolutely must have changed the landscape. So as a matter of scale, it may be very difficult for us geologists and paleontologists to discern that from the fossil record. But in the last chapter of the book, I do talk about what I call dinosaurian landscapes, how dinosaurs must have altered their environments just by some of them being so huge and traveling in large groups that they must have had impacts on their environments that we probably can't recognize today. We may someday. I predict that, yes, someday we will recognize that. But the scale is a little hard to imagine.
And it seems that in the book that one of your wish list items is to know more about dinosaur sex.
Yes. And I did the illustrations of the book, and one of the illustrations I really enjoyed drawing was asking the question, well, what would it look like if two dinosaurs had sex? What would those tracks look like? So I did it for a theropod pair, and then I did it for a sauropod pair. The theropods, they were two-legged dinosaurs. So we do think for sure that the male was behind the female, but then there's that matter of the tail. How did that male get past the tail? And it's a good question with regard to any dinosaur. You think about some dinosaurs like stegosaurs, that's an even stickier problem, no pun intended. Now, with a sauropod, these animals, 20 to 40 tons, maybe more, how did the female accommodate the weight of the male, and then how that would have registered in the tracks? So that's something I had a little bit of fun with in the book, was speculating about what those traces would look like. For the sauropods, I imagine that there would be six tracks. You would see four from the female, two from the male behind, and a little bit off to the side, either on the right or left. And then I kind of imagine a scenario of the female kind of running away and the male just kind of strolling away and going to sleep. Which probably is not true, but nonetheless, it's fun to speculate.
And to keep this in the scientific vein, there is also, when you look at these tracks, whether they're running, whether they're swimming, whether they are walking slowly, all of this can be determined in that tracking.
That's right. Yeah, the distance between the tracks and then the size of the track, how long that track is, then knowing approximately from the size of the track, the length of the track, we can then calculate the approximate hip height of the dinosaur. All of that can be put into a formula, and we can calculate approximately, with good reasonable certainty, how fast that dinosaur was moving. So in most instances, dinosaurs were walking, and that's typical. Most animals today, they spend most of their lives walking. But there are a few exceptional dinosaur trackways where we see a relatively short track separated by long distances. So we know that animal, that dinosaur, was moving faster than normal. And in some instances, as much as, say, 30 to 35 miles per hour. We can figure that out from the tracks. But we also know when they stopped to take a rest. We know when they were swimming, and the swimming can also look like running, where there's a long distance between the tracks. But we'll see these really long claw marks from where the dinosaurs touched the bottom of the water body as they were kind of dog paddling across.
I do think it's interesting because you try to explore any possibility. One of them, and the things that you don't think about, and quite frankly, I don't know why you do anyway, but it is interesting.
It is.
The vomiting dinosaur. So you will have a dinosaur that you say will be of almost 45 feet in height, and then regurgitating, and then the speed to which that hits, the impact velocity, and then what kind of trace that leaves.
Right, and that was a fun speculative scenario. In reality, a Brachiosaurus, which would have had its head about 45 feet off the ground, it probably would have lowered its head if it had to throw up.
Right.
So it might not have been that high off the ground, but it was just a fun physics problem I thought of one day as I was walking. I thought, well, what if a dinosaur puked, and especially a Brachiosaurus? And then I started thinking about the physics behind it and thought, well, there'd be a large amount of volume. It'd be delivered from a great height, and wow, that would leave a mark. So that's something where I think the imagination can go into some reasonable speculation, because I show the calculations, the physics behind it. I had a physics colleague of mine here at Emory double-check those calculations, make sure I was on the right track with that. And those sorts of things, those might help us paleontologists. When we're looking at rocks, we see something really weird, and we go, I wonder what that could be. It gives us some alternative explanations. But it was also fun to do. It was probably my favorite figure to draw and put in the book, just to get people thinking about that more imaginatively.
Well, you certainly got us thinking. There's some fascinating information in the book. It is Dinosaurs Without Bones, Dinosaur Lives Revealed by Their Trace Fossils. The book is published by Pegasus. Anthony Martin, thank you very much for sharing with us. I do appreciate it. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the title, Dinosaurs Without Bones. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.